Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name's Mark Pacey from the Wired Up Archive. Today we're taking you through three more stories from our past. I've created a theme for this one. I thought, well, let's have a bit of fun. So the theme is food. So we're going to be talking about food-related stories today. And I've also taken some brilliant advice on how to coordinate my choice of music, because I always struggle about, you know, what to play. Do we tie it into the, you know, the stories we're talking about? Always struggled. And it was suggested to me by a brilliant person, I said, why don't you just take one of your favorite movies and play two songs that are in that movie and part of the score soundtrack that is in that movie, all three from the same movie. That's one of your favorites. I said, oh, that is another level of genius that obviously I would never have come up with, because like I said, I've been struggling playing a bizarre mixture of stuff for the past while. So we're going to be doing that. So I've picked the movie that I've been playing in the background and watching a lot over the last couple of months. So Dead Poets Society, we're playing two pieces of music that were in it. One of them definitely is. The other one, according to my research, it says it was in it, and I can't recall exactly where. It might be in the background somewhere. I couldn't find the version that they had, so we picked one from a very well-known Irish band. It's an Irish song, so hopefully it's good. We'll see. We'll see. First story today is Whoops, I've got them around the wrong way. That won't make any sense for continuity. One moment. Here we are. In October 1982 came the news that many had been looking forward to. American fast food giant Kentucky Fried Chicken was to set up in Masterton. Then began the long process of securing a site and getting the build underway. The site chosen was on the corner of Crane and Chapel Streets, which had been a fashion store and a Ministry of Transport vehicle testing station. An agreement was made with the Masterton Trust Lands Trust to build the new restaurant. It was said that the new restaurant would seat 52 patrons, have parking for 21 cars, and would create 6 full-time and 15 part-time jobs for a region that was struggling with unemployment. It was not a decision that was met with universal approval. There were 6 objections raised in the Masterton Borough Council Town Planning Committee, a meeting which had been held in June. The council upheld the decision to allow the build to go ahead. Masterton firm Dixon and McKinley Limited landed the $302,000 tender to construct the new eatery, and construction began on February 21st. It would be owned by Masterton Trust Lands Trust, who would be leased to Kentucky Fried Chicken for a 20-year period. The concrete foundations were poured in the second week of March, and the build progressed according to schedule. In May, the fast food franchise began to advertise for jobs they needed to fill when the restaurant opened. We are offering job opportunities to those individuals who are dedicated, highly motivated, reliable, and able to work under pressure. At the end of the advert, they added, people afraid of hard work need not apply. It did not deter people wanting a job. Over 200 people turned up for an interview. There were 30 jobs up for grabs, only 5 being full-time. Official numbers at the time showed there were 1,105 unemployed persons in Wired Upper, the highest number since statistics began to be taken in 1977. The big day came on Tuesday, June 28, 1983. Masterton's Kentucky Fried Chicken was officially open for business, and business was good. The paper ran a captioned photograph that stated the new restaurant opened quietly in Masterton with no fanfare or trumpets, but a steady demand for their products. The products that were on offer were a little bit different than what we have today. Well, the prices certainly were. One piece of chicken and a side of chips would set you back $2.50. A 5-piece pack was $4.50. A 15-piece family box was $12.20. For the bit hungrier, a 25-piece bumper box was $16.35. And for the truly starving, a 50-piece hamper was $47.50. The sides included chips starting at 75 cents, bread rolls, which were 32 cents. A reminder of when we still had one. That's terrible. We'll do that again. 32 cents. A reminder of when we still had 1- and 2-cent coins. Potato and gravy was 50 cents. And for dessert, cheesecake was 65 cents. For those who were more healthily inclined, coleslaw and bean salads were 50 cents, and something that was once common on the menu, corn, which was 80 cents. The restaurant prospered and was the only large American fast food giant for nearly 9 years until the Golden Arches set up in town in 1992. For nearly four decades, people have been able to get their fix of fried chicken and chips from the same location. The numbers of its customers have remained strong, proving that their hunger for Colonel Sanders' 11 herbs and spices recipe remains finger-licking good. You can tell I wrote this a while ago, for nearly four decades. It's been slightly more than that now. All right, so this is the first piece, and this is the one I'm not sure. I've had this movie playing a lot. Like, seriously, in the last couple of months, it's probably played 20 or 30 times. It's a song called "The Fields of Athenry." It's a traditional Irish song. Now I'm racking my brain trying to think, where in the movie did this play? I'm not sure. So we're going to play it. Like I said, there's various versions. I don't know what version was in the film, but when you're looking for Irish music and you find out that the Dubliners did a version, you're like, oh, it's got to be them. So this is the Dubliners doing "The Fields of Athenry." I said it wrong the first time. I'm sorry. Athenry.
By a lonely prison wall, I heard a young girl calling. Michael, they have taken you away, for you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now a prison ship lies waiting in the bay. Lo, lie the fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry. By a lonely prison wall, I heard a young.
All right, we're having technical difficulties. Apparently, the music's not playing. I don't know quite what's going on there. So we'll just do all the stories. We'll do the music next time. So, September 1991, the Times Age, ran an article titled "McDonald's Sign Deal." In this article, it was announced that the fast food giant was coming to Masterton. A piece of land on the corner of Chapel Street and Lincoln Road was purchased from the Masterton District Council. McDonald's property manager, Pat Hedges, said the construction was expected to begin in June. The following year, the restaurant would be open by Christmas. At that stage, the closest McDonald's restaurants to Wired Upper were in Upper Hutt and Palmerston North. Husband and wife team Tony and Angela Rowland were awarded the owner and operator rights for the new restaurant in June. By late July, Masterton firm Rig Shockey had been awarded the building contract and construction on the new establishment began. As progress continued, business owners started to become concerned about the newcomer. It was feared that the sales of local fish and chip shops and cafes would suffer. But in the words of one cafe owner, "You can't go past cakes and pies, can you?" Rumour became rife within the community that the new McDonald's was being built of only half its originally planned size. A mix-up with plans for a Levin restaurant was one of the reasons blamed for this. Masterton District Council's senior building inspector, Morris O'Reilly, put this to rest, showing the media that the plans submitted were the ones being used for the build. Leading up to the opening, staff were on site for training, perfecting their skills for when they would be serving the public. A week before opening, students and staff from St. Patrick's and Masterton West schools were lucky to be invited to a complimentary lunch. Later on that afternoon, 60 senior citizens from the region were also invited for a meal. The big day came on November 3rd, 1992, when McDonald's Masterton opened its doors to the public. It had taken 4 months to build, created 30 jobs, and had the distinction of being the 60th McDonald's to open in New Zealand. and was now one of 13,000 worldwide in 62 countries. Even before the doors opened, a large crowd was waiting outside. On that first day, between 4,000 and 5,000 visited the restaurant and over 4,000 burgers were sold. Owner Tony Rowland said that the sales exceeded all expectations, and despite many still claiming the restaurant was too small, there wasn't a time when a diner couldn't find a seat. In the months following the opening, staff members, which were originally thought as too high, proved the opposite. More staff had to be hired to keep up with the demand. Nearly 40 staff members were working full-time 1 year after the store opened its doors, each working close to 40 hours each. The Rowlands were enthusiastic about allowing people to have their first working experience with them. This provided a sound platform from which they could then move on to the next job. The Rowlands were also involved in local sports teams, encouraging reading programs for children and donating money towards Ronald McDonald House, and were a valuable addition to the community. 1 year after opening, there were 67 McDonald's stores throughout the country. The Marston McDonald's had proven itself to be an example where the restaurant could operate in a town with a smaller population. The locals had embraced it, and traffic continued to be high. This was especially true with the children's birthday parties. Television advertisements showed how much fun birthday parties could be at the Golden Arches. Families now no longer had to travel out of the district. Tragedy struck in May of 1994 when Ronald McDonald was kidnapped. At the Times, Ada reported, after many adventures around town, he was finally delivered into the long arms of the law by an alert Armour Guard security patrolman. After a brief stay at the police sergeant's office, he returned to his perch outside the restaurant unharmed. McDonald's Masterton was a success. Adults and children throughout the district had embraced the newest member of the fast food family and were loving it. I'm just going to test one thing with this. Just make sure that the site isn't muted. Let's have a look. Nope, it is not, so I don't know what's going on there. So I'm sorry there will be no music this time, but we'll catch up with it next time. Right, last story. Okay, so the world was warming to Japan in the early 1960s. Tokyo had been chosen as the host for the 1964 Olympic Games, and Westerners were starting to travel to Japan in greater numbers. The Japanese people were also traveling and visiting countries all over the world. In early July of 1963, Hisako Arai, whose title was Chief Television Demonstrator for Japan for the Meat Producers Board, and her assistant, Masako Ueda, were in New Zealand. They were demonstrating ways of cooking mutton to members of the Japan Society and to representatives of the Meat Board in Wellington, who sponsored their visit. The cooking classes were popular. They were asked to travel around the country, showing alternative ways to enjoy mutton with a Japanese twist. Marston was chosen to be one of the stops, and on July 16, the two women arrived. As the evening closed in, 200 people that the newspaper described as members of various wider upper women's organisations and their husbands filled into the Marston Town Hall. Mayor Tankersley welcomed the two Japanese women to Marston and settled in to watch the show. Miss Arai, who spoke no English, explained first some of the methods of preparing and cooking mutton, her assistant, Miss Ueda, translating. Mutton was sliced very thinly, she explained, and cooked in various ways. Because the meat was so narrow, it cooked much faster than the traditional roasts the New Zealanders were used to. It was explained that in Japan they mainly used cooking plates to prepare their meals and didn't have the ovens that are the staple of the Kiwi kitchen. The rest of the ingredients were then described, some of the audience's new and others that were entirely new. Peanuts, onions and peppers were familiar to those in attendance, but the likes of ginger juice and rice wine was a bit different. The meat and vegetables were all cooked together and served with rice. Alternatives for some of the more exotic ingredients were suggested, including using regular wine in place of the rice wine. Over the course of the night, several dishes were demonstrated, which include chabo chabo, a name derived from the sound mutton makes when it's placed into boiling water, and the very Japanese-sounding fried mutton with peanuts. Those in attendance also got to hear about what it was like living in Japan less than two decades after the end of the war. The cities were becoming very westernized, Arai explained, and meat was something of a luxury item. Rice was the main component of most residents' diets. New Zealand mutton was now being shipped to Japan and was becoming very popular, especially with younger people, as it was priced quite reasonably. Older people, R.I. said, tended not to eat meat. The whited upper weather was also not a big issue to the two women, who were used to the cold Japanese weather. At home in Japan, the winter is even colder than this. Snow falls in the city streets, and in comparison, it is much colder than we have felt here so far, Arai explained. The Japanese women were quite taken by Wairarapa and the rest of New Zealand. Arai was especially taken by the kind hospitality shown to her during her time spent here, and will remember her visit fondly, describing New Zealand as a very friendly country. And for those who are interested, here is Hisako Arai's fried mutton with peanuts recipe. So ingredients, you'll need 3/4 of a pound of mutton, sliced very thinly, 1 tablespoon of ginger juice, 1 tablespoon of rice wine, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 6 tablespoons of corn flour, 1 egg yolk, 10 ounces of chopped peanuts and frying oil. Cut the mutton into thin slices and marinade in ginger juice, rice, wine and soy sauce for 10 minutes. Dust the meat with corn flour, dip in egg yolk, sprinkle with chopped peanuts and fry. I have tried this. It's quite nice. You've just got to be very careful when you're cooking it that you don't leave it in one place too long because the peanuts will detach and burn to the bottom of your frying pan. Found that one out the hard way. It's a lot of fun to clean up. But it was very, very tasty. So that is me done for the week. I don't know. We'll have a look at this music situation next. I'm sure it'll be fine. We'll fix it for next time. And in the meantime, I will research, I will rewatch Dead Poets Society and see if I can find out where that field of Athenry, yeah, where that came from. Yeah, Athenry. It's in there somewhere. It has to be. Either that or Google's lying to me, which is also entirely possible. So we will catch up with you, like I said, on Monday. Sorry, it's been a shorter one this time. I'm not going to waffle for 15 minutes. You don't need to hear that. Have a good one, and we'll catch up with you on Monday. See you then.